know that there is something magical inside of you, but you don't know how to uncover it? The Heart Sing podcast is dedicated to just that, helping you put yourself first and figure out what lights you up. I'm your host, Addie B, aka Slayer of Namaslayer, and through my journey of losing nearly 100 pounds, uncovering the magic of my soul, and building the life of my dreams, I'm leaving no stone unturned in the process of self-discovery. And I'm here to share it all with you, so let's get started. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Heart Sing podcast. I have our special guest here, Mary Beale Adler, your fifth time here on the podcast, Mary, and thank you for joining us. Little quick tidbit about Mary before we dive in to hear all about her cross-continental tour of Africa on our bicycle, sleeping in a tent for 4 months. Now, if that's not epic, and we've all been waiting for the download, you've been back a few weeks now getting settled in, and we just can't wait to hear all about it. So a little bit about Mary. She's also known as a Sparkinator, known for her ability to spark a level of magic, and the Biohacker for her passion around increasing the quality and longevity of her life. And a little bit more about Mary. She's a successful entrepreneur, author of Who Scooped My Bagel? And a creativity coach and owner of the Georgetown Bagelry, and also a human potential coach. So much amazing stuff that you bring to the Heart Sing podcast community, but also to the world, Mary. And I can't thank you enough for being here and sharing with us. And I just want to dive in and hear all about, like, really get the download. I've been getting, of course, you did a great job sharing your journey from across the ocean. You really did. Like, it was just great for those of us following you on Facebook or social media to be there on the ride with you. And I don't even know where to start. First of all, how are you adjusting being back?
It's, well, Addie, thank you. And just before I address that, I have to say, while I was over there, the sisterhood, the Me for Sisterhood that you created really made a huge difference for me, knowing that I had like this strong group of women behind me, supporting me, and knowing, you know, seeing my potential, basically. So that was really heartwarming on those cold, hard days. And I appreciate it. You know, I appreciate everything that you're putting together with the sisterhood. It's absolutely awesome and life-changing.
Well, I was really excited to see you check in as much as you were able. It was surprising. I didn't think you were going to have as much internet. It was really great to see you be able to come in on the plan thread and all of that. So yeah. We love, you know, of course, you're like the heartthrob of our community. We love it, Mira. So thank you. And thanks for that.
So yeah. I have to say that I expected to have much more connection than we did over there. I mean, we were in the rural parts of Africa for the most part. I mean, we did hit some cities and have rest days and stuff, but the internet would be, Wi-Fi would be weak and intermittent. So it was really hard to connect. And I have had a crew of women back here, Marissa from the Strategic Peacock, and some young college girls working at my social for me. And so they were my voice for the most part. And I took as many pictures as I could, which were not very many. I kind of had to stop, because by the time I would stop, you know, we were riding our bikes. I wore full gloves for a lot of reasons. That could be a podcast right there, I suppose. I wore full gloves. Not everybody did, but I did. And it had the extra padding and some protection. And if you have a mechanical, it just helps to have those gloves. So I made that habit. And by the time, you know, I keep my phone in my back pocket, I didn't use that for navigation. So by the time I would take my gloves, grab my phone, take my gloves off and go to take a picture, the moment passed. So, so I tried to just absorb where I was and be, you know, consciously present and, you know, own it in my heart. So, yeah. I did what I could, you know.
I don't know if saying that you were on a 4-month tour of going across the continent of Africa speaks enough to like this journey you were on. What would you, how could you paint the picture for listeners more of, you know, just like maybe your day in and your daily, one of the questions that came up when I asked what kind of questions, maybe it's a good place to start, was if you got into a routine or a rhythm, and it seemed very regimen, like you just were riding all the time and then pitching your tent. And then like, what did your days look like over there as you were?
Well, it was incredibly intense in a lot of different ways. So the goal was getting from Cairo to Cape Town on our bikes. For me, I had other personal goals, and mine wasn't being the fastest or the any of that cycling wise. I have a really strong cycling background and skills, and I'm very confident in that. I imagined the real challenge for me was going to be camping and the group dynamics, because we're with 35, 40 people, give or take. Some people rode Cairo to Cape Town. Others did sections. They had done other sections. It was, you know, for whatever reason. So we had people coming and going a little bit. And then we had a core group that went top to bottom. And so the interpersonal dynamics changed a lot. And people, all of us, when you have these long days, like we got up before the sunrise. So we would get up, you know, you take down your tent, get your bike ready, you know, eat, hit the road. And depending on where the weather and stuff like that, for the most part, we would try to beat the heat or the wind or, you know, whatever we thought we were facing in that day. And many times that would change. So by the end of the day, and depending on, there was not an easy day. So even though like on paper, it might look like not as much miles, not of tough of terrain, or you have a paved road, well, the paved road might be absolutely horrible and you have traffic with no rules, you know, like,
no. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you're riding on the other side of the road and things are just very, very different. So nothing was really easy, and it didn't take long for us for exhaustion to you know, kick in for everybody in very different ways. And you have all the different fitness levels, all the different life experiences. All the people on our tour were from 14 different countries. So very international, a lot of different languages, thank goodness, because it made it easier as a group to communicate with locals. So those were challenges that I really tried to pace myself, not just cycling, but with those dynamics, and to keep myself very as balanced as I could. And another one of my goals was to finish strong emotionally and mentally, so that I want to keep riding, and I could do that physically. Now, if I rode as hard as I could in every single inch and really wore myself into the ground, which I basically did anyway, even with the epitome of pacing, I mean, I really felt like I was pacing myself really well. So that was a real goal. I think I pretty much accomplished those things, and also not being injured, which, you know, we were talking about the big leap in one of the groups, and upper limiting for me, I tend to like wipe out, or, you know, I kind of like go. So I was really very conscious of that. And I did not want to have an accident.
Yeah.
And so early on, I noticed, you know, most of the accidents were happening toward the end of the day. You know, it's when you're tired and you're not really present and stuff like that. So, you know, I kind of just reined that in just so many things, hydration, nutrition, and recovery. So how do you recover when you're going basically 24/7 at 100%? And, you know, there's different people had different ways of handling the day. Like some would ride hard and get into camp earlier and not stop and as much. And I mean, you had to stop and get hydration and things, but I've done other, the United States and stuff. And a huge part of the adventure for me are the stops and meeting the people. And early on, I learned that when I was with a group and we stopped, the dynamics were very different than if I was alone and I stopped, because then I had to communicate. I had to develop the relationship. So I stayed alone a lot and in very small groups. Now there were times where it wasn't safe to be alone. So you know, we stayed together. And I don't know, what was the question again,
Annie? Yeah, no, that was great. No, it was really good. I just asked you to kind of paint a picture of the tour. And I think you did that a great job. What would you say was the number one thing that kept you going? If you were to pick one thing that kept you
the magical moments. So it would be, mm-hmm. you know, I remember so many moments when I would be in some place remote, alone, you know, a gravel road or something, and in the bush, and you go through little villages every so often, and I'd hear singing, you know, I'd hear singing from a school, like children singing, or I'd hear like a local church, like singing a cappella. And it was just the most beautiful thing to hear those rhythms and music out of, you know, it's like coming out of the earth. And that really brought me like tremendous joy, because these were places that were very poor. I mean, shacks and mud and straw huts, and the colorful, you know, out of the bush, there would come, you know, I remember one time this young woman on a bicycle, which you didn't see very often, girls on bikes at all, but it really remotely in the villages once in a while, you know, you'd see one. And, you know, just seeing this young girl in her African dress with the bright colors, the fabrics are bold and colorful and for the most part. And, you know, like there might be a sewing machine in a village or someplace, and you could tell everything was custom made and fit to their bodies. Never saw an overweight person until down by South Africa, when more processed food was around.
Yeah.
And people just work. I mean, and basically were very, very poor. So yeah, that kept me going. And the children's faces, you know, just those big, broad smiles. And they'd have like no shoes, make really torn up raggedy shoes, if any shoes at all, and raggedy clothes and hundreds of kids. I mean, like, I don't know where all the kids came from. We'd come through, they would hear ahead of time that we're coming, and they're boom, they were out there.
Cute.
We were the Mazuga. We were the white people, you know, like some of the little kids that lived really remotely, especially the young ones, had never seen a white person, you know? So it took me a long time to figure out, you know, and yelling at us, like calling at us, but it was endearing. It wasn't anything negative, but sometimes they would like swarm our bikes, and some of the kids would start, you know, being kids, and I'm like, okay, don't touch my bike, because we right. fall over, or, you know.
Yeah. Well, there was a part at the beginning of the journey that I remember was little kind of almost scary. Was it, you were in Sudan maybe, or like,
well, yeah, the stone throwing. Yeah. We had a good bit of that throughout Africa, but Egypt, Sudan, more than Muslim countries, but it wasn't because of that, because they're Muslim countries or anything. We saw that further down, bows and arrows, you know, just whatever is local. And you have to, you know, over time, and after talking and sitting down with some of the farmers and stuff, and realizing, you know, throwing the stones, a lot of times that's how they get animals to move, and their kids being kids. We learned later that the kids in Sudan, the teachers were on strike. So all these kids had nothing else, had nothing to do. So we were like the entertainment. And, you know, things would get out of hand.
Yeah.
But one time, it was further down, maybe it was Malawi. I was alone. It was a beautiful ride. It was just a beautiful day. And I'm taking my time. The weather shifted. And I kind of got caught in rain and hail and stuff. And I'm coming through this little village in the mountains. The road is quickly turning into mud. And all I can think about is, how am I going to get back into camp? I just told them, because we'd have sweepers come through. And I said, I'm going to ride through this, because I was seeing all these I was seeing all these animals and stuff. It was really pretty cool. So I go through this village, and there's all these little kids that swarmed out, and they're surrounded my bike. And it wasn't cute, you know. I mean, I'm like, was kind of over anything being cute with the kid. And so I put my foot down and I turn around, and the kids just to talk to them, right? And they flew, they ran. I scared them because they didn't expect me to stop and start talking, you know? And I sat there, I started crying. I'm like, they're scared of me, you know? And I didn't, and it was like such kind of a new knowing for me to realize I'm just the unknown, you know? It's scary. But from then on, whenever kids would get, I would just put my foot down, they'd fly, they'd run. like you're going to do anything, you know?
Yeah.
So I the learning was communication and just different languages. But after a while, you know, it's like your eyes and your smile, it just says it all. A smile speaks volumes, you know, and these little kids, they lift you up just with their radiant smiles, and they had nothing and no programming whatsoever. They're not sitting around playing video games, watching TV, any of that. They have like basically nothing of what we would think is something, but they have untarnished imaginations. And I think when the time comes that education is there, and it will be, you know, with AI and stuff, more evenly dispersed globally, I think. And I think these young kids that haven't been programmed with everything will have ideas to change so much. Mm-hmm. So my goal is to live a long, long time so I can see it happen.
Yeah. Speaking of change, when I interviewed you before you took off, I had asked you something about what you thought you were going to get out of this. And you said, well, I think I'm going to come back a different version of me, that things that I don't even know about myself, and maybe that other people see in me that I don't yet see. And I thought, I was like, whoa, that's kind of deep. But also, like, did you have some, like, doing something this epic and this draining on you physically, you know, like, what did you see in the depths of yourself, or have any realizations about how this changed your life?
Ooh, that's a big one, Addie. I'm definitely changed, and I'm definitely, you know, not the same Mary that, or Sparkinator that landed in Cairo. But I just see more possibilities in the universe, I see fewer limitations for myself and basically everybody else, and I think that's just, you know, riding and being alone with the wind and the elements and all the different roads and really having time to just be, you know, without any programming whatsoever, nothing in my ear, you know, just really stillness. And I think when there's a lot of space for change, when you make space for stillness, you know, and it's like one huge meditation. And I think I've expanded that space for myself. and also getting things done. I didn't really realize it until I got home. And, you know, just everything had to be in its place. You have a little tent. And I can't tell you how many times in this little tent, I couldn't find something. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, so pretty quickly, it's like everything goes in the same place every time. It was funny because people would lose socks, would be running around, who's got my sock, you know, and not me. I did not lose a sock, but it was kind of like a funny thing, but it was sort of frustrating. It's like a tent stake. Okay, I'm missing two tent stakes. Where the hell did they go? You know, or, you know, just literally being very, very organized. And I always thought I kind of was, but I really am now. And also just getting stuff done, like thinking, oh, you know, just procrastination, basically. It's just do it.
Yeah.
You know, there, you know, you either do it or you know, things like laundry, you have what's in your bag. So if you want clean chamois, you got to wash them. And it doesn't matter how tired you are. Sometimes you got to wear them when they're wet. They're not all dried out, or your tent is dirty and you know, like it rains all night and you're basically camping in mud and shit. And you know, you got to get. Well, yeah, you know, there are.
I remember your video of when you got a hole in the tent and you were like, and you made like a little hammock to catch the water. So I was like, oh my gosh, forget it. And then there's kids outside yelling and you're trying to sleep.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. The rain was coming through. I can't remember what happened, but I carried trash bags. Thank you. My coach, cycling coach, said, make sure you take, you know, trash bag, because you can put your stuff in plastic, but you can't just always buy plastic over there either. So, you know, I really hung on to baggy, anything. And you just don't waste anything. And I really noticed that when I came back here and I went to the bathroom in the mall, it's like just toilet paper and wipes and, you know, like hand towels and things that don't exist.
Yeah.
And that we just take for granted. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm running water. Never run, you know, brushing your teeth was like, you do it, you're sitting in your tent with like a little spit can. I mean, that's it. And you know, getting home and having running water and, you know, like we would have days without a shower because there was no water. Right.
Wow.
And the water we had to be for hydration and hygiene, you know, and one person gets sick, everybody's getting sick. So.
Wow. What is the one thing you wish you would have taken? One thing you could pick. In fact, I think the person that asked this question said a mechanical tool you wish you would have taken. Or is there just anything you wish you would have taken?
I did. I took it, but I couldn't find it or I misplaced it. Was the exact wrench for my my tires. And I went through multiple, our mechanic had one, but he couldn't just like give that to me. So if I had a flat on the road, I had to, so that tool would have been helpful, but basically I had backup for the backup.
Yeah. You were really preparing for a long time for it.
And everybody did. So if I didn't have we all helped each other tremendously. I mean, for the most part, I mean, it was a competitive group of people and, you know, but we really did help each other a lot.
What do you think did you have like a hardest moment that you were just like, this is it, I'm done. Like, I'm out of here. Did you have a moment like that that hit you?
No, because I was finishing one, I was getting to Cape Town one way or the other, you know?
Yeah.
And, no, I never, no. I mean, there were rough, there were a lot of rough moments. You know, the freezing, you know, being really cold and wet and then sleeping and, you know, that was kind of rough. And then having to get up and put everything wet in a bag and then ride, you know, 100 miles or 70, whatever it was. That was hard, but you know, you just kind of do it. I did have a day. I always had things happen. Like when I felt like giving up, I just like healed it. Cause you know, I do know how to access the quantum field. And I did many times.
Yeah.
So this one day it was after after the night I froze getting into camp, and it was in a school yard that was muddy and hundreds of kids all around their tents, and I'm soaking wet. I get my tent up. I get in my tent, trying to get my clothes, wet stuff off in the tent. The kids start throwing stones at my tent. I'm in it. And I'm like, I cannot believe they just want my attention. So I get it, all of that. There's no way I'm going out. So I'm just, you know, getting my, and all I can think is, we have a huge day tomorrow. The next day was really big, and it was climbing. It was pavement, but it was climbing. So, you know, we go from mud slide to pavement, but a lot of climbing, and you're soaking wet and tired. So I'm thinking, okay, I've got to eat. Okay, I got to go out in the rain to get food. I got to eat and go to sleep in wet, and it's wet. So I did it. And then the next day we're riding along, and I'm also a little ticked because my bike was set up wrong. I had a bigger tire in the front than the back, because I somehow, my bigger tire disappeared. So I had this bad setup, and I really had an attitude about it because it was hard on my legs, you know, and it was just harder to climb. If they're the same, it's just easier. But I couldn't really switch it back to the smaller because we did still have a lot of gravel. Took me about a month to get my head around that one, but I did. That's, you know, it's just being like stubborn upstairs, and my legs were killing me because it's like, well, everybody else's, I could have used a couple more gears on my bike too, but everybody, and I have a lot, but everybody else's legs, like climbing the mountains, are going like this, and mine are, and I'm just like tearing my legs apart. So I get to the biggest climb, and it's before lunch. I'm by myself, and I just pulled over to the side of the road, and I thought, you know what? I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, I need help, you know, and I'm just standing there. I'm getting ready to do it, but I'm thinking, I need help. This guy comes up on his motorcycle, and he speaks English, and he says, do you need help? And I said, yeah, I need help. He goes, well, you know, I saw your people up there with the truck, and they're getting food out, and, you know, it's up at the top of this climb. And I said, yeah, those are my people. And and he goes, well, I'll take you up there. And I said, how are you going to do that? You know, it's a motorcycle, right? So these other two local guys are walking by, and they said, oh, we can do that. Let's strap it on. So we figured out how to strap my bike on the back of this motorcycle. I get on, and the guy, he was a gold miner, which is, I'd have to look at my thing, you know, to know which country I was in, but it was green, and it was beautiful. Big change from where we were. Anyway, we became quick friends, had an absolute blast. I pull into lunch, and my friends are all like, Christy, she pulled out her camera. And so I have some good, I'm going to frame that picture because it was just hysterical.
That one so I can post it with the podcast info. So, yeah, I loved it. Like you on the back and the bicycles tied on, and look at like knowing.
They're all getting whiplash. Like, yeah. What's Mary doing? You know? So that was like, I'm like, hey, you know, that's the entrepreneur in me. I figure stuff out, you know, and if there's an easier way, I'm doing it. Right.
And talk about divine timing. Here you are at the side of the road thinking, I need help. Up rolls this guy that speaks English and everything. Like, wow.
Absolutely.
Like you absolutely created that. Yeah. So cool.
Yeah. His wife's name was Mary. His kid, everything. Yeah. It's great. We're still like connected. So that was a magical moment. I had many of those moments. Another one was, a very similar day, and I'm going through a village. I'm alone again, and I have, I don't know, about 30 kilometers to go. Not far, but it's still climbing, and I'm like over it, you know? So there's a took there. Yeah. I'm like, and why am I doing this? You know, I'm just wanting to get to where I was going. And this tuk-tuk loaded with a whole family. A tuk-tuk's like a three wheeled vehicle. It has like front seat, a back seat. And sometimes they're kind of like taxis, like like Uber and third world. Anyway, tuk-tuk. So this guy pulls up with his whole family and they were stopping at some stop and I'm standing there and I said, do you give people rides? The whole family got on this one. They all got out. They figured out how to get my bike strapped in there. They were like, it was so much fun and so helpful and it was not that easy to do. We strapped my bike in. Well, if you could have seen the look on my friend's face. So I'm in the tuk-tuk going by and my friends are like climbing up the climb and I'm waving at them. But that was like a magical moment. And then I pull into camp. And the staff is laughing. They're just laughing their asses off. They're like, Mary, this is second, you know, because I'm always like figuring. It's just kind of part of the adventure for me is to meet people like that. And, oh, on top of it, I left my wallet in the tuk-tuk. He took off and there were motorcycle guys there. And they said, Mary, well, so they said, do you want me to go get your wallet? I said, yeah, you know, So twice in Africa, I lost my wallet and got it back. Just people being kind. It's not like anybody's trying to steal. It's just like you lose it or it falls out of your pocket. We lost cell phones and stuff too. And with Find My Phone and Find My This and That, we'd always get stuff, usually get stuff back. But so I got my wallet back. So the guys took off on the motorcycles and got my wallet back too. And our tour leader was like, Mary, nobody gets their wallet back twice. I said, I do. Yeah. So I had like a lot of those kind of adventures.
Yeah. The whole bathroom situation. Yeah. Were you like in holes most of the time, like digging holes, or did you have facilities most of, or like, how was that? Just tell me a little bit about that whole thing.
Well,
like,
if it was really remote, which was most of the time, yeah. So we'd set up outdoor toilets, like you dig. Tour, our leaders had the right tools, you know. They dig down a deep hole, and we put up two like little tents around the holes, kind of a little away from camp. So sometimes you could use those. Other times when we were really remote, you just take a shovel and you go get lost and dig your own hole. And then there's a whole protocol for sterilization. Like, you know, you spray the handles and all of that. But yeah, no, I definitely hoarded wipes and toilet paper, and you can't always get those things. So, and, you know, there were like, you know, at some, yeah. It was a little rough. And then places that did, like campgrounds, camp areas would have bathrooms, but they were so not what you would imagine. I mean, basically, sometimes the toilet would be where the shower is, you know, like it's just really, you know, it's almost more hygienic to go to the bathroom outside somewhere.
Yeah.
So it was pretty rugged, you know, you just. And that's another thing I noticed back home, because I really got used to, you know, if I have to go to the bathroom, I go to the bathroom. You just find a place and you could, you know, you go and you learn how to, you never leave anything out and you dig holes and all of that. But so I really noticed coming back, it's like, oh, I've got to find a bathroom.
Yeah, it's
and some like, are nicer. I mean, when we got showers, we didn't have showers and stuff. We would make shower, we'd get buckets and that would kind of put up tarps so we could have a little privacy. But, you know, that would be a shower. And then some places would have like running water and showers, and very rarely was it hot, so it'd be cold. So you really learn how to take fast shower, and you hit the key areas, like basically your butt, because we're sitting on our saddles all day. And you know, like I'd wash my hair maybe once, you know, whenever you had water.
Yeah.
Or just rinse out the salt and dirt and stuff like that. And, you know.
Would you do it again?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Are you going?
Yeah, I mean, there's no necessary, you know, I'm big on no repeats. So there's always something different to experience. I wouldn't, anything in my in life, basically, I don't want to do over and over. I mean, there's a whole world of adventures just in my own backyard here, you know?
Yeah. So what's next? Have you gotten there yet, or are you still decompressing?
Well, next for me is just, you know, living life. I mean, I am racing Steamboat in August. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm a little concerned because it's so flat here. So I'm talking to my coach tomorrow morning, and we'll put a plan together for, you know, keep staying strong. But at my age and stuff, like, it just, you know, the pack narrows. But cycling is, you know, cycling. There's so many other things in life.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't really had time to. It's so, Daddy, it's so epic. Like, I'll see people that have kind of followed what I was doing and stuff, but they'll say hi and they're glad I'm okay and stuff, but really can't even come up with questions because it's sort of beyond imagination. Like, if I mean, thinking back, like being in Cairo, just getting to the start line and needing extra passport pictures for visas we needed further down the road, and, you know, navigating, figuring out how to get passport pictures in Cairo, you know, nobody speaks my language, you know, so just that, and then going to the markets there, and this is before we even started, that was beyond my imagination, just the colors and the culture, and, you know, it's just a different world. You know, it's not Europe. It's not the Americas. So that, you know, just that. And then, you know, desert and, you know, elephants and giraffes and zebras and, you know, rhino, you know, just everything you see. And
it was
Yeah. So many stories. Did I tell you about there's a Zambezi River? I don't know if I told you.
That when was you dying. Were rafting? Yeah.
Yeah, you did. So. So that was pretty, that was like another one of those moments where, you know, the energy just basically saved me. My aura ring. Oh, that was the other thing. So my aura ring got ripped. Aura is, you know, it tells me readiness and sleep and all of that. And I really did pay attention to it. So I knew. I would go to bed, boom, sun's down, I'm in bed, because I needed that time recovering. And it all showed up. So it was a great tool. But when I got sucked in the Zambezi River and my ring was ripped off my
Because hand. You guys, I just want to clarify, it wasn't enough. They were biking across the continent. They had right. whitewater rafting. So Mary's whitewater rafting on a day that, I don't know, it could have been a rest day, right? But you guys were like, hey, let's go whitewater raft. And then you got bounced out and almost died.
Yeah, I got sucked in. Yeah, I did almost die. But they saved me. And so my backup was my Garmin watch. It tells me a lot of the same stuff that Aura does. So I was watching my sleep, you know, and my HRV and all of these things. And it just, you know, it was kind of a weird thing, but it taught me to be flexible enough, you know, in yeah. my way. It's like, you know.
Do you feel like, I mean, you did a lot of preparation going into this event and a lot of biohacking stuff. And do you feel like you were, like, you had everything prepped that you needed? Was it just like you could, even the delay leading up to you being able to go was almost like a godsend, you know, because you were given all this extra time to really get deeper in meditation and in your biohacks and stuff. How did you feel with that prep going in? Like, I don't know what if I'm asking clear questions.
Oh, it made all the difference in the world, because my voice is very strong, my fifth energy center. And when there were a couple times when things went haywire in our group, and I, because of all of the coaching and work that I did, I could speak up in a kind way and be very direct and speak truths in words that everybody's sitting there. I'm like, oh no, this behavior isn't happening. This conversation, we don't have to, you know, like it would get a little wild and intense, like people losing it. And that prep work really served me well because I'm balanced for the most part. And I know enough that when I'm not, to go meditate, lay down in my tent and also just heal. I wanted to be able to heal myself. And so there were definitely times when things happened and I needed to heal myself quickly. And I did, you know, the river was one of them. I mean, just the repercussions and headaches and stuff like that came from that. I cut my hand once, not cycling, but it's like putting air in my tire and, you know, just being able to like, first of all, notice when something needs to change in me and changing it. So, that's kind of a vision and insight I have, an awareness for, you know, healing and the work that I put into learning how to do that. And it's not really work. It's just being consistent and doing it when, you know, doing the meditations when I don't feel like it and just making that commitment to myself and the world to change and to be a healer, you know. And I don't heal myself, you know, just start right here. So this was like the perfect playground to practice that, pretty intense. And also, you know, just to the work I did, it really reined in balance and, you know, not wearing myself into the ground because in any area. So yeah, I learned a lot.
Yeah. What do you think? What did you bring back with you that has changed how you're showing up in your everyday life now?
What's that?
What did you bring back with you? Not a thing, but like in your spirit that's changed how you're showing up in your life now.
Well, I just know I'm much more capable of things than I ever imagined, whatever that might be. Like, I had so many people doubt that I could do this, but I'm, you know, in my, I just said, watch and learn, you know, but the big learning was for myself, really watching myself and learning. And I just, you know, I think the big challenge for me now is, you know, where do I use what I've learned and my strengths to make a difference in the world, you know, for good and for happiness and joy. And, you know, so I'm just starting with myself and family, and it'll be clear. I don't doubt. Things come to me much faster than, you know, it's that 10 times thing. It's like I notice things much faster than I used to because I've made space there. I have much more space there. I don't really enjoy being in front of a TV, you know, anything programmed. Yet I appreciate the art that goes behind creating things, you know. So yeah. So I'm just, you know, I'm figuring it out. And I have to say, you know, with in the sisterhood, the 24-hour plan, I do it. And it is so freaking powerful. It's like, you know, if you write something down, the chances of doing it are so much higher than not, you know, it's like the magic pages, all of that stuff is like, you know, by the time you think by the time you think how hard it is to do it, it'd be done.
Seriously. Yeah. Speaking of which, you guys, we're having our next event, June 25th. Planner orders will be in soon. So if you're listening real time, get in on the next Me First Guide. You can join us in the sisterhood and Mary and all of us other badass bitches getting up over and over again.
That's right.
Lives. Yeah. And so, Mira, before we go, I do want to talk about Global Bike. You had mentioned the young girl riding her bicycle through the village earlier. And, you know, your cause that you raised over $22,000 for, which is amazing. People can still donate. So I'll put that link in the comments so you guys can go. I mean, even like $5-$10 helps and get a bike over there, right?
Oh, it's huge. Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah, like every little bit matters. And so did you see the women in these villages using like so it sounds like
Global not our bikes, not Global yeah. Bikes. Global Bike is in Arusha, I believe. And that was about 2 hours from where my camp was at Maasai. I was at Maasai campsite and I had a rest day. I could have gone over, but I needed to rest. So I did. And so I didn't actually see the operation, but I can tell you, it changes lives big time. And what one of Global Bike's fortes is, they've taken it to another level with teaching the women, and now some, you know, men are involved too, so it doesn't shift the community, which happens often when funds come in from outside, where they learn small business operations. This is why it moved me, because I'm in small business too. And there are like skills, a lot of skills to it. So the women, so they brought in technology for parts and, you know, to like really run the bike shops productively and intelligently. And so the more educated, and now many of the women are being educated now, which is huge. You know, just being able to get to a school, getting to healthcare on a bike, or the nurses having, or the health cooperatives being able to get to women when they're having children and stuff. Because in some of these places, you know, there's the medical, any kind of care is just so, you know, there just isn't much. So just getting to those places is huge. Water. So the women that aren't educated learn how to do like repairs and be mechanics and things like that, because you don't need to be able to read and write. You just need to be able to fix a bike. Right. So, no. And it just makes a huge difference. It helps them so much. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember you talking about, I think you were in Cape Town when you were at a store or something, and you were, and this might've been on one of our polos or something, but you had shared about a woman who had her husband had took everything and left, and you had said something like, well, she was, which was really a blessing though, that he didn't kill her. Like, so is that how it happens? Like they will just off their spouse or like,
well, that's a broad, you know, I would, that was one individual, but I would say by, you know, women basically globally are not valued the way men are. Like in some of the countries, if you ask, well, I'm thinking Sudan, but you know, the farmers and stuff, you know, do you have children? They would say how many boys they have. Well, do you have any daughters? Oh yeah. And the number of girls to boys was always less. So, you know, you can't help, I couldn't help but wonder, you know, where are all these little girls' babies? You know, where are the girls? They're in the houses with the mothers, not, you know, getting an education is, you know, it's a gift. But this is, you know, that's not all of Africa by any stretch of the imagination, but that bias and it exists big time. And I wouldn't say it's just Africa. It's, you know, there's a lot of abuse and human trafficking, things like that.
Yeah. Oh, gets deep. Well, and to be just in the heart of of it. Yeah, you know, and, isolated over here, it really opens you
and
up.
And Addie, those conversations, like with that young woman, it was in, it actually was in a shop in South Africa, in Cape Town, where she left her village and went to school, and she has a daughter, and she's basically, you know, sending money back to her mother in the village. And that happened because I was one-on-one with her. If I was with other people, that conversation wouldn't have happened. So that was another reason I really liked being alone or in a smaller group, because I could really get, you know, have those kinds of interactions where your heart and soul and she could really be seen, and like, she's not alone. And, you know, I could share some of my life experiences with her from totally different culture, yet similarities, you know? And I just think that's, you know, that's the gift of life, is to share our stories and our heart and soul and whatever that is, because, you know, none of us are alone.
I think that's a beautiful note to end the podcast on. It just really, you've almost got me into tears there, Mir. I think it just really special. And it is true, like sharing our stories. And that's what this podcast is about, right? Really through sharing my story and yours, you're like my podcast guest and Renee sometimes, but like, it's just been really special to be on the ride with you. So thank you for sharing with us. Is there any like last minute thing we didn't talk about or that you wanted to make sure you shared with people?
Well, you know, again, I just think it's really important to don't dream too small. Dreams do come true, and dream big.
Yeah, I love it. Dream big. You heard it here, witches and bitches. All right. Yep. Until next week on the Heart Sing podcast. And hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you need more Mary, there's 4 more episodes. You can go back and binge in reverse if you'd like. See the leading up, because we've been talking about Tour Da Freak for a couple years. So dream big and know that through small actions that you can get to your goals too. And you just never know what way it might come to you. That's half the fun of it, right? So thanks a lot, Mary. I love you. Thank you.
Love you too.